message. It's been on my heart all week. I find it many times difficult to know exactly how to get started or what way to approach. I know where I want to be at the end, but you all already know it takes me forever to get to the end. And now that I can see the clock, that's not really going to help any. That's just going to make it seem a little bit more difficult. But we trust that the Lord will help us to do that. I made a comment in Sunday school this morning that I had watched what parts of the Democratic Convention that I could. Some of it I just couldn't, and I didn't agree with a lot of the things that were said. But the one thing that kept coming to my mind was it seemed like that there were so many that were remembering the days of old and trying to relive their youth. I think we all try to do that perhaps at some time. I know that I still enjoy the music of the 60s, and I'm glad that there's a radio station that I can listen to all the hits of the 60s. It brings back for a little while the remembrance of my youth. But, you know, as we pass through our time, that we many times, and as Brother Bo said in Sunday school, that we mature and we come to points where that we can make a difference on other people's lives. And I think many of our politicians need to recognize that they have served their time and step aside. And that's on both parties as well. That's my personal opinion. I see that happen not just in politics, but through the course of time that I've been able to be in and around many of our churches. There's been many times that I've seen that there could be a stubborn older deacon or a stubborn or older preacher even kind of stands in the way of things moving and progressing as they should. And I pray that that's not the case with me. Fortunately, we have young deacons, so I'm sure that's not the case with them. But that's just a fact of life. And so the title of my message this morning is "The Hour Is Come." You'll see where that comes from in a moment. I want to read a I got two things that I want to do. I want to read a background lesson, and I want to talk about that lesson particularly and expound upon it. But before I do that, I'll have to lay down some groundwork and some foundation for it. So if you'll bear with me, I'd like to take my reading and my lesson that we'll talk about a little bit further down in the message. I'd like to take that reading from the book of John in the second chapter. To my knowledge, I have never used this passage in my preaching. I couldn't find any notes that I've ever taken on it, or certainly I've referenced it, I'm sure. But it plays an important part in the things that I want to say this morning. And so picking up with the first verse, I'd like to read down through about the 11th verse of the second chapter of the book of John. It says, "In the third day, there was a marriage in Canaan of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there." Now that third day, you have to go back to the preceding chapter to recognize that it's the third day after he came down into Galilee in that area, after that he had gone to John the Baptist and he had been baptized of John. He'd called out, it tells us in the preceding chapter, at least 5 of his disciples out of his 12, and they seem to have been with him. So it was 3 days after they had gone down into Galilee. He'd already called about 5 of his disciples. And so they went into Galilee, and it says that there was a marriage there, so there was a celebration going on. "And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, They have no wine. And Jesus saith unto her, Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. And Jesus saith unto them, Fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he said unto them, Draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom and said unto him, Every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse, but thou hast kept the good until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. Now, I don't want to expound too much on this right now, but I want to read my text and give you a foundation that will play into this, if the Lord will help me. And my text comes from a familiar verse to all of us from Ecclesiastes in the 3rd chapter, the 1st verse. It says, To everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under the heaven. So times and seasons are related, and we are a part of that. In creation that God has created for man, because God created all this, and it says at the crowning on the last day of creation, which was the 6th day, that He created man. And so man was center in His creation, and all of this, even that which we've not explored yet, even that which we are still learning about in our own bodies and our environment, and all the things we're developing, and the space launches that will take place if the Lord tarries in His coming, all of that, from here to the farthest galaxy, was created in some way, maybe not all yet known to us, for man. And everything within this creation, and this has always been an amazement to me, I guess maybe because my background is in science and I work in that area, but all things in creation are either numbered, weighed, or measured in some way. Everything has to have a parameter to it. And as God created this great creation, He put laws, the moral laws are in effect as well, but He put the laws of nature in effect that govern it. One of the things that I learned early on is, if you're going to fix something, like the postal system that's going on right now, if you listen to the news, before you can fix it, you got to measure it. You have to be able to understand the breadth and the depth and all that encompasses it before you can begin to set about to do something about it. And so we find that all the way through in everything that there is a measuring or a weighing or in some way accounting of things. And so all of that is part of creation, and it's done for our benefit. And we're able to utilize those things. Now, the thing that we call time, which that clock back there is keeping time of, it's got measurements in it that we have sorted out, and we've tried to break it down. But God set the pattern to start with in the very beginning. The very beginning, the opening of this word, begins to tell us and describe how God did all of this, and the laws that govern it were put into effect. In the book of Genesis, in the 1st chapter, the 1st 5 verses, it says, In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness He called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. And so it opens up with giving us something to measure by, something that we understand is divided up and has purposes, each one of them. The night has a purpose, as well as the daylight. God divided them, and we can measure by those days. And so we find that creation had a beginning, and in that beginning, God set some of the rules and the laws that govern it. But also, this creation will have an ending. The same book that tells us about the beginning tells us about the ending. And in the ending, in the book of First or Second Peter, this same book that God has given us, that we might have knowledge, that we might have understanding, that we might be able to comprehend more about this great creation, and yet we know that time moves on. And so we know that this thing, that this creation, as we know it, this creation as we know it, now we think that it's going to go on forever. And it certainly may go and very likely will go on past our lifetime, but we don't know that. But God has said, just as He said in the Old Testament, after He destroyed this world by water and brought all living things that had breath in its nostrils to death, and ended that old world and covered it with water so that it was unrecognizable. And as it emerged out of that water, only those who came through it were those that God had brought through on the ark that He described for us. And as the land began to form and to show shape again, man brought his naming from the old world into the newer world, and he called it Mount Pisgah, or he called it this or that. But those were names that he brought forward. It was unidentifiable as the old world because it had been totally reformed at God's command. And God has told us likewise that this creation as we know it will again be destroyed, not with water. He's given us a promise of that, and God's promise can never be broken. But He still says that He will destroy it. And Peter, in 2 Peter in the 3rd chapter, 10th verse says, "But the day of the Lord..." Notice that day. There's a day. Every day has a purpose. Every day brings something as it progresses along this linear thing called time. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens, talking about all that's above and all that's out there, whether it be our atmosphere, whether it be the stars or the galaxies that are light years, there's that measurement. It is so far away that we have to measure it by the distance that light travels in a year. That's how broad this universe is. And here we are, this little tiny speck here. And yet God has done all of this for a purpose for man. That's how important that man is in the creation that God made. And yet He's allowed us ways in which to figure out how to measure the breadth and the depth of this great creation. But it says that the heavens shall pass away with a great noise. Now, what's a noise? We measure noise by decibel. Some things are a whisper, some things are a shout. And so you see, all that we're able to comprehend has to be, first of all, measured in one way or another. Tall, short, fat, skinny. All of this falls into a way of measuring things. And so God has set that. It says the elements, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The elements are those material things that we can measure or weigh or number. Those are the material things that they shall all melt with a fervent heat, and the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? Looking for and hastening unto the coming day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. And so the Bible, this book, lays out the beginning and the ending, and everything in the middle we call time. And time those measurements between, and we're on that line from somewhere between the beginning and the ending. And as we read there in the book of Ecclesiastes, to all things there is a season. There's a season for all things. And within those seasons, there are certain times that things will happen. And so we find that that we're taught to use this thing called time wisely. We're to become wise and use it wisely. So seasons that we talk about are segments within time. The Bible, same Bible, in the beginning, in Genesis, tells us in the 14th verse of that first chapter, first of all, we know that day and night are separated. We know that that there's light and darkness. There's opposites. But it tells us, and God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night. Those stars that you see at night, that sun that you see and the moon that goes around it, all of that are in the firmaments of heaven. They play a part and they divide the day from the night. You can't see the stars in the daytime because the light of the sun overshadows it. But at night, when the sun has fulfilled its day and has moved to the other side of the earth, then you can see the other stars that are out there. And so then the night fulfills its purpose. And many things happen during the night period as far as the plant life, restoration. We rest at night. I've always said I worked shift work for 15 years, and my body never did adjust to it. I always said if God wanted me to work at night, He'd put a big spotlight right there in the front of my head. But He didn't, and I believe it's intended for men to rest at night. The plants rest. There's oxygen, carbon dioxide exchange, all kinds of things that goes on. So everything has its purpose, and it's time to do that. We understand that it says He divided the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And so there again we have this measurement factor in here, and we find out that there are seasons. Now, seasons, as we have divided them up, we find that for the seasons for us, there is the spring and there's the summer and there's the fall and there's the winter. Certain things happen in those seasons, and we adjust our lives and our living based upon those seasons. And if you follow poor Richard's almanac, you'll know in what season to plant certain things, and you'll know in what seasons at certain days of the season that certain things will be done. So all of this fits into the plan of God. And if we take a look, we'll find that that nature is laid out that way. That we can look and we can see as nature rotates and moves, we can it is orderly. Certain predictable things take place. We can recognize the seasons by the things that are taking place. Now, our children don't know that until they begin to grow up and absorb that information. And so we can make plans based upon as the seasons are moving and certain things are happening within that season. So nature itself lays out that course, just as God intended. He intended for us to come to an understanding about the many things that transpire based upon how He laid it out in nature. So not only does nature follow that course of spring, summer, fall, and winter, moving to different cycles, but we find if we study God's Word and if we study history, we'll find out that nations move the same way. Nations have beginnings. They have times in which they build up. They have times in which they prosper. They have times when they're at peace. They have times when they're at war. They have times in which that things begin to change and they begin to go the other direction. Just as our fall begins to let us know that that there's a winter coming. And so if you look at the cycles of nations, and history will record this, it does record it, that nations rise, nations do well, nations fall off, nations are gone. Where is Babylon today? Where is the Chaldean Empire? Where is the Roman Empire? Where is the great empire of England? It's gone. Oh, England still exists, but it's only a shadow of what it was. And so we see that nations rise and nations fall. They have seasons in which they prosper. They have seasons in which that societies get along and seasons where they don't. All of these things are following the dictates and the course that God laid out. Why should we expect any different? And I say that with all sincerity, particularly to this younger generation. I love America. We have been so blessed. Travel around the world and go to a third world country like Africa and look at the difference between daylight and dark. I mean, it's that stark a difference between what we have and where we are and where they are. But you have to go to see it. I fear that many here in America don't recognize how important and valuable these freedoms are that we have. But just as Thomas Jefferson said that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, if we don't work and labor to maintain those things, They will pass away. Our summer season in which that we've grown and prospered and we've been blessed by a great harvest, a crop, those things will pass away. And folks, this is not a political speech, but it certainly plays in to the politics of our day. And I don't know which side of this equation that you're on, but I'm here to tell you that the choices that are to be made this time will set a course that are totally opposite. And so this is a critical point in time. The hour is now. The hour is now, and the choice that this country makes is going to determine the course in the future. Now, that has been true at all elections, but more so right now than any time that I've ever lived, and more times, I'd say, than Brother Bo and some of others who have been around a while, that we see these things. I lived through the racial riots in the 60s. I was a teenager then. But it wasn't like this. It wasn't like this. Even the Civil War wasn't like this. The course that are laid out before us are totally opposite. And so the hour has come. The hour has come for us as America. But I've got to move on because that's not where I want to end up with this. And I pray that clock would stop back there and quit moving. But time marches on. And so we see that nations rise and fall. And don't become so content and so set in your mind that America will always be like it is, because it won't be. There are those that are nipping at our heels that they want to be the dominant world power. They want to be the currency that the world uses instead of the dollar. They want to be the ones who force their will and their way upon the population. And so it is a critical time. And don't think that America will always be this way, because that, as history has proven, they rise and they fall, and should the Lord tarry in His coming, somewhere down the road, this nation too will come down to its winter. And when that happens, someone else will come in. And it won't be like your mama's and daddy's, or even mine, our years. I got to move on. This happens to nations. It happens to churches. Where are the seven churches of Asia that we read about in the book of Revelation? Gone. Can't find a trace of them. Where are the churches of the Waldenses and the Albigenses and all of those that we can read about in church history? They're gone. They're not there anymore. They served their purpose in their time, but there came a time when they were no longer there. Since I've been able to fill this pulpit for 9 years, I know of two churches that I preached in myself in Nashville that are gone. One by one, they're falling away because we can't get the attendance and the people don't pick up. And we don't want to see that happen, but let's be realistic. If effort is not put in, this church will not be here in a generation or two, because that's the way of nature. There are seasons. There are times. There are times within the churches that there's great revival and the Lord blesses us. And we see many souls saved. And then we may go into a cold period where it seems that nothing is moving, that our prayers can't reach to heaven, that the heavens are like brass. And then the Spirit of the Lord will sweep back in and there'll be a reviving. Those cycles come and they go. But just as Jesus told the seven churches in Asia that if they didn't correct their faults, if they didn't correct their weaknesses and return to their first love, that there would be a day come when they would no longer exist. And folks, history has proven it out. And so we need to bear that in mind. Churches have seasons, just like nations have seasons, just like that nature has seasons. And now let's bring that down to the individual. For we too have seasons in our life. And we divide them out. We divide them out. And the four seasons of our lives that I divided out are our infant years. Those in which that we're born. And we have a beginning. We have a beginning, just as there's a beginning to all things and there's an end to all things, except our eternal soul, and that's a different subject or a further subject. But our lives have a beginning in our infant years, and there's certain things that take place. There are certain times and things that take place in that season of infancy it's in there that our bodies begin to develop. And the child begins to grow. You can't hardly hold Bentley anymore. He's just getting too big. And he's getting more weight to him. And all of those measurements and things are increasing. And he begins to talk. He begins to walk. All those things happen in our infant year, which is about from the 0 to 5 years, as those things begin to develop. Now, we continue to grow after that. But our bodies and our emotions, particularly, our emotions began to develop in those years. We love it when we see the child begin to laugh. They cry, they don't have any trouble crying when they want something or they need something or they're lying to you that they're saying because they want your attention. So those emotions begin to develop. That's natural. It's the season of that development. But then we move from that spring season, perhaps, or whatever season, I guess you might relate it to spring, as things begin to blossom and bloom. But then we move into our childhood years, and you'll find many references in the scriptures to the child when we know from the content that it's not a newborn baby, but it's somewhere from between the ages of 5 and 20. We find the reference to Abraham took Isaac, the child, it says, up to offering back to God, up on the mountain as God had directed him. But if you study about it, you'll find out that Isaac was probably about 18 years old. But he was still considered as a child because he was developing, and there are certain things that develop in that childhood period. Our relationships and our family bonds are built. The child becomes integrated into the family, and those relationships begin to get strong, to bond together. And so we find that happens. It's during those childhood years that we educate our children. They start about kindergarten, about 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old. When we were growing up, it was 6 years old. But kindergarten's come in since, and pre-kindergarten and all of those. But it's a period of education in which that we go through about 12 years of high school to school if we can. We get what education we can, but there are learning years. There's a season for that. Now, we continue to learn as we grow, but that season is designated for us to put our minds and our energies toward learning and becoming more educated about all that about us. We establish our identity and our character in those years as we're maturing. Those years are so important. They're so important to our development. But then imagine what it's like for the child who has no family, or the child who is an orphan out here and on the streets and doesn't have the privilege of education. Go to third world countries. You'll find it's totally different than it is here. And you'll find that our society is beginning to break down. And the reason it's breaking down, because the family unit is breaking down. As the family unit breaks down, there's no place for those bonds and those relationships to build. There's no parents, plural, who care enough for that child to educate them. All the government will do it for you. That's because they want to bend the mind of your child so that it will think the way they want that child to think. And I'm not ditzing our public schools. Our kids went to public schools and we got wonderful public school teachers. But let's be honest. Look at the higher education and see where the minds are being twisted. That's a tool that they use during those years to bend the mind the way that they want it. Adolf Hitler, that was one of the places that he targeted, was the youth, and began to turn the youth toward the state and away from their own families and their own parents, and even having the youth to turn in their parents to the government when the parents didn't do what the government said they wanted them to do. You see, and those very same things began to eke its way into our society. Beware of the camel's nose and the door, where it can go. And so those things are all important. But also, and primarily, I want you to understand that it's in those early years, in that year what we call coming to accountability, that the season and the time and the season for the child to begin to establish their relationship with their Creator and to develop a relationship with God that might follow them the rest of their lives. That's why you'll find that the vast majority of those who have been saved in that developmental years. And when they begin to start to get about 18 or 19, and they haven't been saved and they're about to go out on their own, we get worried about them. Because we know that the world draws their attention and they go another direction, and the probabilities of them, not that they can't be, but the probabilities of them reaching out to God and coming to God begin to shrink and shrink and shrink. And I can tell you that the older that you get, the harder that it becomes and the less likely. There are far more that are saved in these childhood years from 5 to 20 than there are from 20 to 40, and certainly from 65 on up. You hear it rarely, but it does happen, but rarely. I'm going to run out of time. And so that relationship is established. Then we go into our adult years. What do we do in our adult years? We begin to serve our communities, and we begin to serve and find our place in the society in which we live for the purpose for which that we've been educated, the purpose for which we've been brought up, the purposes that surround us, that we might take hold and be a productive member of society and produce something that is beneficial for us, our families, and those that are around us, and this great environment that God has given us. And so our adult years, we need to assume our roles in society. We need to walk with God and seek His counsel. I gave Brother Jacob that Bible. We've all got Bibles. We're fortunate. Believe me, it's only been in recent years that Bibles have been available, and still in many countries, people don't have them, and yet they are the best instruction manual that you can possibly give your children, but your children won't read it unless they see you reading it, unless they know that you use it as a guide for your life. And so our adult years are to be ones in which that we seek the counsel of God and we study His Word and we become the vessel that God can use for His honor and glory. We establish our families. I read about Jesus going to a wedding. I don't know how old the guy was that was getting married, but I know that Jesus was about 30 years old at that time. I know that's when we began to take our mates and we establish our own families. We began to raise our own children. We began to fulfill our responsibilities in the course of the season of our adulthood. We produce our workplace. We provide for our families. And even our society recognizes that there is a limit of time in which that we're able to do that. I recognize it, and Cindy recognizes it, every time we keep our grandkids for a day or so. We are wore totally out because the season of our being able to keep up with those children has passed. And we do our best, but we can't do it. If we had to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, our life would be shortened, and we might be commit murder. I mean, you know, who knows? Those of you grandparents know what that's like. It's not that you don't want to. It's just that you can't anymore because your body has already passed that period of time. That's why we have our children when they're young. God knew exactly what He was doing He set those seasons in our lives. But I got to move on. For after we serve our generation, we move into our adulthood. We call it retirement about 65 years old, when even society recognizes that they've got the best years out of you. But even in adulthood, or in our senior years rather, in our senior years, 65 and up, ever how long that the Lord might allow us, we can still be productive, but not in the same way. At that point, we should have gained wisdom. We should have gained some knowledge that we can begin to share with the next generation. We should be able to share things with them on spiritual matters, on financial matters. We should certainly have acquired some knowledge of finances and how they work and how the family can work and the need to pay your bills and that your income and your outlay and all these things in the middle. We should have accumulated some of that knowledge to pass on in our senior years. Family matters. Children, our children, as they begin to have their own families, they're going to encounter many of the same problems we encountered. And as we've all said, those kids don't come with a manual, but in some ways they do. We have this manual, but we also can draw upon the experiences of our parents, if we're fortunate enough to have our parents that are alive, to how can I handle this situation? So we should be able to counsel. That's really what our purpose is in our senior years, is to become counselors, to become guiders of those in all of these family matters and the financial matters, and in political and social matters as well. I can tell you, many of you young people, if you will listen through the experiences that I've had, how society moves, through the study of history, through experience, that if you choose to go down a path of socialism, you may think that it's great that somebody's going to give you everything, but God did not design man to be that way. He told Adam and Eve that they were to work and to, by the sweat of their brow, that He would provide for them. But He requires some effort on our part. The great detriment to every society, that has gone down the tubes, is when it becomes socialistic and the people no longer want to work, or they want to redistribute the labors of others. It would be great in a utopia if everybody received equally, but it just doesn't work that way because of human nature. If you want to see what socialism will do, look at Venezuela, look at China, look at the systems that have tried it. And I guarantee you, folks, you don't want to live under the rule like the Chinese rule is, where you have lost your liberties and your freedoms. And so don't let somebody sell you that bill of goods. And we as an older generation just see that, and I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed with those political leaders who should know better. And rather than misguide and mislead the young people, they should try to lay out, here's the danger of going down that pathway. But they have their own agenda in this, and so they're willing to sell it all out that they might be able to stay in power. They glory in the power or the money or whatever goes along with it. But in reality, they're not being honest to the younger generation. I got to move on. And so, in our adult year, in our senior years, we should be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. I got to get to my lesson. I got to move to the wedding at Cana, because there's something that's important there. Remember, the title of my message was, "The Hour Is Come." Jesus said in this event that took place at this wedding, and I think it's important for us to understand that the first appearance of Jesus was really not in a temple setting or a church setting, but it was in the everyday things of life, a celebration. Weddings were great celebrations, and the people were having great enjoyment one with another. We're intended to be social creatures, and Jesus validated all of that by appearing at this great festival, and that's where He had His coming out, if you will. And so we know the story as we read it, that the wedding was set, the guests gathered, they ran out of wine. I can get it into a debate whether or not it was alcohol or not. That's not the purpose of this. But they ran out of wine. They ran out of that which was important to the enjoyment of the festivities. And so Jesus' mother comes to Him and says, "They're out of wine." And Jesus answers her in the fourth verse, "Woman, that seems strange. Why would He call His mother woman?" Well, it wasn't a derogatory remark in any way. You have to look at the use of that word in the New Testament and the Old Testament to understand that it was a term of respect, but it was certainly not a term of endearment like mother. And so He used the term woman, and He never referred to His mother as mother again after this point. You'll find that He refers to her as woman. What He's doing is He's drawing a distinction. My time has come. I'm no longer subject unto you and my father. I don't know whether Joseph was alive at this point or not. But He was drawing attention to the fact that the roles had changed. That time had come. That season of His life had come when He was moving into His purpose, which was to come and to redeem the world. It started out when He first went to John the Baptist to make His coming out, if you will. And there on the banks of the Jordan River, as Jesus was baptized, and the Spirit of God lighted upon Him like a dove and said, "This is My beloved Son." Not Joseph's son. It's not Mary's son. He's My son. And I'm well pleased in Him. And as Jesus made this comment to Mary, He was letting her know, "My time has come. The season for which that I have been brought here has come. Our relationship is no longer as it was. Now, let's be honest. Mary had to have known many things about Jesus that the rest of the world didn't know. The angel had appeared to her and said that she was going to conceive of the Holy Ghost. Now, the rest of the world might not have believed her. They might not have believed that he was truly the seed of God in her womb, but she knew, and she saw him grow up. She saw the difference. She had other children. She saw the difference. She knew. I don't think she had fully comprehended all of it, certainly, but even as she dedicated Jesus there on the eighth day when he was circumcised, and it was said to her by Simeon that, yea, even a sword shall pierce thine own heart. You will have to be come to a time in which that you will be grieved and sorrowed. Jesus was letting Mary know that he had moved from her son to his position, to his purpose in life. So he's saying, what is that to my purpose that these are out of wine? And so Mary grasps that, I believe. And so it was a turning point in their relationship. He was no longer her son, but now she had to view him as her Savior and the one that God had sent. And it was the time in which that this was about to happen. Now he said, my hour is not yet come. That's important for us to understand that there was a certain hour that he'd come into this world for. There was a certain thing that he'd come for. And all of his life was lived for that hour. And he said, my hour is not yet come. And yet, it was the hour of his coming out. And so it says that he performed his very first miracle. There had to be a beginning of the miracles which he did. It was right here. It was the hour of his beginning to demonstrate to the world that through the miracles that he was the Messiah, that he was the Son of God, and we follow him through his ministry for 3.5 years. And on two other occasions, John says that on one occasion that they sought to make him king, but he slipped away because his hour was not yet come. There was another occasion in the treasury, it tells us, I believe it was in the 12th chapter of John. It says that he was in the treasury and they sought to take him because they wanted to kill him, the high priest did and the religious leaders, but it says that he slipped away because his hour was not yet come. And so there was a purpose and a season, a time within that season of which he just launched here at this wedding of Canaan and began that season of his purpose, which was to be the Redeemer of the world. And there were things that had to transpire. He had to train his disciples. He had to prepare them. He had to do many things that others might know who he was. All of this working toward that day. All of this working toward that time that he knew was out there. And we can go over to the book of John, 17th chapter. After Jesus had that last supper with his disciples, after he'd girded on that towel, gotten down and washed their feet, and told them that the only way that you can truly be my disciple is to serve one another. And he demonstrated all of that. And there in the midst of them, and if you'll look at the timeline is important because most of us think that this great prayer was in the Garden of Gethsemane in the 17th chapter of John, but it was not. It was right there in that upper room with his disciples, because it says in the 18th chapter of John, and John wrote it because John was there. It says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples. So this prayer was not prayed in private. This prayer was prayed in public to his disciples that they might understand what he was trying to say. And he opens up this prayer, 17th chapter, first verse. These words spake Jesus and lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour is come. The hour is come. Glorify thy Son, that thy Son may also glorify thee. And so as the clock ticked, as the seasons passed, and he entered in, there came down to the final hour. There came down to the final hour when the hour had come. The hour in which he must offer himself up, that he must be bear the weight of the sins of all the people, that he must be separated from the Father, because the Father could not look upon sin. All of this, let alone the physical turmoil and punishment that he was going to go through, but it came down to the hour has come. Folks, there's an hour that comes for all of us. There's an hour to be born. There's an hour to be saved. There's a time, there's a season when the Holy Spirit will deal with your heart strongly to draw you to Him. And if you resist and turn away, that season may pass. Your hour may pass because there's an hour for each of us, I believe. There's a time and there's a season. And within that season and that time, you need to respond to it. And so Jesus' hour came. The hour was come that He would be lifted up. Now the Bible had prepared us for this. If we'll study the Word of God, the Bible prepares us for this. What was going to happen? He was going to be cut off. Then the prophet Isaiah, it says that He was cut off before His time. Before He had lived out His full life. He was cut off. In the 53rd chapter, 8th verse of Isaiah, He was taken from prison and from judgment. And who shall declare His generation? For He was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgressions of the people. Isaiah had said there's one kind. When the fullness of time was come, God brought forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law. There was a point out there where that He would come into the world. And He came in through the vehicle of Mary's body, taking on Himself the body that He might live among us. But when the time came for Him to lay down His life, I want you to notice that this, back in Ecclesiastes, it tells us that there's a time for certain things to happen and a time for them not to happen. There's a time for peace. There's a time for war. There's a time to build up. There's a time to tear down. There was a time for Him to do miracles and there was a time for Him not to do miracles. He performed this miracle at Canaan. He performed miracles all through, but there were times that He would not. The people came to Him and said, "Give us a sign. Show us who You are." And it says that He would not do it. He was taken before Herod, and Herod said, "I hear You can do miracles. Do a miracle for me." But He would not. It was not a time to do miracles. It was not a time for Him to do the miracle that He could have done, which was to call the legions of angels from heaven to deliver Him off of that cross, but it wasn't the time for that. The time of miracles had passed and one was yet to come. There was the Roman soldiers who said, "If You're really the Son of God, come down off of that cross and save Yourself." He could have done it. But it wasn't the time for miracles. That time had passed. That time had passed. And so the hour had come for all that He had come into this world to do. And He gave His life on that cross. He gave His life on that cross. But yet there was one great miracle yet to come. One great and glorious miracle that is still today the focus and the center of who He is and what He did. And that is, He said, "Destroy this temple." The temple that in which God dwelt. And in 3 days I'll raise it. I will raise it up again. I will build it up. You tear down these stones and I'll build them up. There was a time for it to be torn down. There was a time for it to be raised up. And He rose it up again. And through His resurrection, we have justification with God. It was an important miracle. It was the very heart and soul and center of that which He came to offer us. If He couldn't raise Himself from the dead, how can He raise us? If He couldn't overcome the greatest trauma of all, the greatest plague of all, death, how can He save us? And so He demonstrated that He could. And many believed on Him, just as they did at the land of Canaan. And so there's a time for those things, and then there's a time for those things to pass. That's my lesson. I want to leave it with you to think about it. I really want you to think about it if you've not been saved. If you're of that age where that you've come to accountability, you're in that season. You're in that season where your heart is tender, where that you're listening to the Word, where the Holy Spirit is dealing with you, and He's knocking on the door of your heart for response. And perhaps today is your day. Perhaps today is your time. Will you let it pass? Will you let the clock continue to tick? My time is up, and I yield it back. Brother Jeff, if you've got a song, I hope you'll think about these things. I know that I've been long in terms of time and seconds and minutes, but just a snap of a finger compared to eternity. And it could be the most important message I've ever delivered in my life if the Holy Spirit can use it to turn your heart and save your soul. Because your soul is eternal. It will not end. It will spend eternity somewhere. I pray that it'll be with God. Go ahead, Brother Jeff. In the best